Good morning, how are you doing?
Yeah, not bad. How are you?
I'm good. I decided rather foolishly to upgrade to Mojave about half an hour ago.
Yay! You got to do that sort of stuff.
Yeah, top tip, never try and upgrade your operating system 20 minutes before you're recording a podcast. It just takes ages, that's all. And I
It
fired it
did it
up
though.
and
It
it's
did it
like,
though.
oh.
Yeah,
Oh yeah,
that
it's
was
all
cool.
fine. Yeah.
That's very quick.
I'm not desperately impressed with this dark mode. Like, there are lots of bits that don't seem to work. Like, I've just had a message from you saying ready when you are, and the mark
Yeah.
is red and reply buttons are like in a grey, so you can't read them.
That's
It's
weird.
like, that's not quite right. And the mail app looks horrible if you've got a threaded conversation, because the like bits that show that it's threaded are purple, blue, and green, which is
What?
fairly unpleasant to look at.
I need to check that. I don't use the built-in mail app because I got fed up with. I
Ah,
can't remember
okay.
why. I can't remember why it was. Oh, because I started using Inbox at one point, and I was doing snoozing because I just liked the idea of
Yeah.
running away from messages for a couple of days. And I've gone through a few mail clients, but the one I've settled on at the moment is one called Canary, which is quite nice. And it runs on all the devices, but you can do snoozing and stuff. But what I really like about it is it's got it can block trackers from people. So if you get marketing messages coming through, and it will say it's blocked a tracker. But ironically, it will let you send a tracking pixel so you can see when people have read stuff, which is quite cool. So it's quite funny when you sort of send a message to someone and then you can see the read thing come in. And then so you know they've seen it. And if it's something important or something, whatever, you're having a go at them or whatever, you'll suddenly get a phone call, or you're chasing payment or something. It's
Just
quite handy.
send you a screenshot so you can see what I mean. I like the new screenshotting. Screenshot works like iOS
Yeah,
now. That's nice.
really, really nice. Where have you sent that in messages?
Yeah.
Yeah, the screenshot stuff's really nice. Oh, Jesus. That looks
Yeah,
terrible.
it does, doesn't it? It's really horrible.
Well, I don't know. I haven't tried the settings in that yet, but I know Canary has its own dark mode, which I don't know if they're going to implement. They've got like a sort of dark transparency mode. But what they do that's quite clever is that you can have the dark mode for messages, but you can override it. So you can just say, I want the interface in dark. But when you show me a message like that, I want you to show the content of that message with its original background, so it will have the original colors,
I
so it
guess
doesn't
this is
try and darken.
because it's plain text. So
Yeah,
that's why
probably.
it's using that. If I go into the settings, I've just done it now, there's a fonts and colors option and it has color quoted text, purple, teal, green. That seems to be the default for dark mode, which is it's just not a very pleasant color, but
Yeah, I've got used to it. I mean, if I didn't have it on dark mode, I'd wonder what, apart from some of the little features like screenshots, it wouldn't have that much of an impact with me in terms of what's changed. The dark mode, I've sort of got used to. So I've got it by default on everything now, and I'm just upgrading this Mac that I've had to buy to Mojave at the moment. So that's just finishing at the moment. That was a bit of a painful process trying to get that set up. But
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, I think I installed. I have got to be careful because I'm the sort of person that will just go and stick this stuff on, and I will stick on early betas and then totally regret it. But I think this year with the betas, it's been really, really good. iOS 12's been amazing. I think I put on beta 3. I think I
Yeah, we
definitely,
both did.
skip one, thought about it on two, but thought no, I'll wait. And then I was getting lots of nice reports about three, so I put three on. And I think with Mojave, I put on. I think it was four or five. It could have been three, but I think it was at least, it could have been four or five, and it's just been amazing. I mean, I've had less issues with Mojave beta than or beta, whatever you want to say it, than I have with the actual release version. My release version, I used to get the odd lock up and the odd crash. I
Ah,
used to have
okay.
this really weird issue where I think it went away when I switched laptops, so it could have been a hardware issue, where my whole machine would just freeze. Everything would just freeze. But so the natural thing to do is you'd go, okay, restart. But if you just left it for like a minute, it would suddenly come back, and you'd be pressing keys and doing
That's
Alt Tab and all
unideal.
this stuff. Yeah, and you'd just, what the hell? And then when it did come back, it would go completely mental, obviously, because it had buffered every single keystroke you'd done. So all of your menus would suddenly fly about everywhere, and
I used to
Alt
have
Tab would
that,
come
and
up.
it was a
It's really weird.
Bluetooth issue. It used to happen with my keyboard, and then I had to plug my keyboard in to the power, and then it would fix itself. I
Yeah,
had that a lot with the keyboard,
that
but that
could
fixed
be.
itself when I switched over to the dark, space gray,
Yeah,
keyboard and trackpad when I bought those.
That could be, because I had lots of weird Bluetooth issues as well with the old. It was before I got this new laptop as well. So I don't know if it was a combination of OS, because there were OS updates. I don't know if it was a combination of, because I always do the whole restore from backup. So, I've got the same, effectively the same setup for years. You know, I haven't done a clean install for years. So I had this weird issue where I'd resume, open the laptop in the morning. So bring it in from the house, plug it in, lift the lid, and then none of my Bluetooth devices would work. And Bluetooth, nothing would show up in the Bluetooth settings. And then what was really frustrating is if you tried to turn off Bluetooth to go, okay, I'll turn off Bluetooth and turn it on again, it just wouldn't do anything. It would just hang and it wouldn't go off. You try killing the task, all these different things. So then you'd reboot the computer. You just, do a force reboot or whatever. It would come back up and then nothing would work because Bluetooth was off because it had actually switched it off and remembered it, even though it didn't.
Okay. Yeah.
So then you'd have to turn it on again and then everything would be fine. It was just really weird. And I haven't had that since. So I'm hoping those days are gone now. But yeah, I mean, my hubby's been amazing. The only reason I don't normally upgrade as a developer is you can't do the old App Store builds with a beta.
Yes, that's exactly why I don't upgrade.
Exactly. And
also, I mean, it's if my phone breaks, it's not the end of the world because I have other spare ones. I don't really use my phone. Like, it's odd as an app developer, but like, you probably get this all the time. People go, "Oh, what's your favorite app? What apps do you use?" And I'm like, I barely use any. I don't like using my phone. I rarely use it. And so if it breaks, I'm like, don't matter. I can go to the Apple Store and get a new one, or I can swap out one of my test devices. But if my Mac breaks, I can't work, and that's bad.
Yeah.
So well, I have that. I don't tend to fuck around with it. And also, I have a load of weird stuff as well. Like, I run my media server off it. I have Homebridge running on it for all of my lighting and stuff. And so I'm very wary of upgrading until it comes out of beta. I'm turning off this dark mode. This is horrible. I'm just looking at the documents folders at the bottom, and they're just like, look, really grey and just disgusting. This is horrible. Why the fuck do people like dark modes? What's wrong with people?
That was the whole thing about the event, wasn't it? It was like the whole launch was everyone going on about. That's all everyone talked about. Dark mode. Finally, it was like, oh my god.
I just think it looks shit.
But another thing, just on the betas, what was I going to say? I was going to say something about the iOS submission. That was one of the things I did. So when I finally sort of said, okay, I'm going to bite the bullet and install this because I want to try it out. The one thing I did quickly was I basically set up OS X. I set up a Mac OS instance in Parallels so that I had a virtual machine and synced my keychain and everything. So I had stuff synced and then just basically transferred a couple of certificates, did a couple of test builds to be able to submit, to make sure that they actually compiled and everything. And then once I was happy, I could do that with a couple of apps I was working on. I just upgraded because then I knew I had a fallback. But what was weird was when you read up everywhere, it goes on about the fact that you can't submit builds with beta versions and you'll get this warning about the build system when you submit it. I think it was the one before the GM. Did they do a GM? Yeah, they did do a GM. So the one before the GM, so it was still like beta 12, I think it was, or beta 11 or something. I keep saying beta and beta, switching my betas. That version I was able to submit to the App Store to test flight. Now, I don't know if that's because it's test flight, but I didn't get any warnings. I didn't get anything. It went straight through to test flight. And as far as I'm aware, that's still the same version that's been up there that's going to go live. So I don't know whether that sort of flag or that ability changed later on to say, well, you can submit.
So the way that works is you can always submit things to iTunes Connect or App Store Connect now. That's right. Not the point when it kicks in. It kicks in when you try and actually submit it for app review. Then it'll go, no, because you're using this build was made with a build that isn't supported. So when it came to the GM going live and them allowing submissions, that flag gets turned off internally. So even if you'd uploaded something with like an old beta, it would still work.
Right, got it. Okay.
But cool. Test flight, obviously, if you couldn't submit betas to test flight, there'd be something very wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Kind of need to.
No, but I've been really impressed by it. I mean, the whole process, the upgrade process, the only little glitch I had, just talking about Bluetooth and stuff, and you saying about, if your Mac's dead, you're screwed, was I think I might have mentioned this before, but that time when I upgraded to beta 6 or something and my power stopped working, like the next morning I plugged the computer in and I've got this little hack that does the beep like the iPhone. So it goes ding, to say it's charging because you don't have an indicator anymore on MagSafe. And it didn't charge. And that's when that panic went through my head of, that's my day ruined as I have to drive to Basingstoke to an Apple, an Apple store or and buy a off-the-shelf thing or see if I can get a genius to fix it or something. But it turned out there'd be a pram reset or whatever it was, and it was fine.
Yeah. I'm quite lucky. I mean, I have both the Mac Pro, which I use for my work, and then I have a MacBook Pro, which is really just for when I go away. So like today I'm going over to Sweden for a couple of days to visit a friend, and I take the MacBook Pro with me because sometimes we code up a little project or something together. I might tinker with some little side project, and that's all my laptop's for, and also for playing PC games in bed with Parsec streaming, so that I can literally sit and play PC games on my MacBook without having to install Windows, which works incredibly well. But apart from that, I don't use my laptop, but I could if I needed to. Like if I was really screwed, like the Mac Pro just blows up and I don't have time to go to the Apple Store to get it all fixed, or there's going to be like 5 days to repair it because they don't have the parts in or whatnot, then at least I could feasibly work on my laptop, but it would not be a fun experience because I'm used to having things a certain way which just aren't set up on that machine.
Yeah.
Like most of my tools are not there. Like I have Xcode, obviously, but everything else, all my workflows aren't there, my settings. It's not plugged into a big screen. Oh, and there's,
there's the Ring doorbell. You going to go and get it? La, la, la. We need some lift music at this point.
I'll edit that out.
I was just doing some lift music as a little...
It sounded lovely. Maybe I'll leave it in. Saves me having to do any editing. Good.
I think that's what you want. You want literally. What was it? What was that TV show where things used to cut to a scene and they'd have like that music? You know, like the gallery with Tony Hart. You want something like that?
Exactly, just like that.
Yeah. As soon as the doorbell goes and you've got to leave, you just get that music kicks in, and then
It's called Two Step Something.
Yeah, that's what.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, I used it in a YouTube video once when. I had something that was taking a long time and had that in the background. And then I got a warning because it was copyrighted music that it detected. And I hadn't even thought about it. And then they basically started showing ads in front of that video so that the person who owns the license to that song gets the money.
Oh, wow.
That's their way of dealing with it. Which I thought was pretty good.
I think it's like 15 seconds or something. If you use more than 15 seconds or something.
It must have been literally 15 seconds. It was not a long piece of music. Yeah.
Yeah,
I always think of the Blues Brothers when you see them at the end going up in the lift. It's playing the girl from Pasadena.
That's the one. Yes,
Pasadena. And they're just there, like just going up, and the army's like assembling outside.
Yeah, that's a good little tune to have. I'm just looking over at my my iMac, which has just finished installing, and for some reason the Mojave Dynamic wallpaper is in night mode on that. Yeah, on my background, it's in light mode.
What is this dynamic thing? I saw that was like one of the top features.
Oh, I mean, I wouldn't make it a top feature, but basically it's a wallpaper of the Mojave Desert and it changes throughout the day based on the time of day.
So it's not, that's nice.
It is quite nice. I mean, but what's weird is that my one is showing, you know, a nice bright sunny day. And when I look over there, it looks like it's nighttime, which is a bit weird.
See, I use an app called...
I think I know what the one you mean. Live Wallpaper or something? No.
It might have been called that. It changed its name at some point. Actually, in fact, it doesn't seem to be working here. I've got the background, but I don't think it's running in my taskbar for some reason. But it's called Urview.
Oh, okay.
And what that does is it literally, you can give it a collection of images, or you can use its default ones, and it basically just changes your image every so often. Like, I have mine to change it, I think, 2 or 3 times a day, and it just cycles through nice pictures of nature. It's quite nice. Just makes the background a bit more interesting rather than having the same thing all the time. But I thought that's what the feature was going to be. And then I saw the dynamic thing. I thought, oh, does that mean it just changes if you have dark mode and light mode enabled? Was what I assumed it did.
Oh, I see.
It changes with the time of day. That's
But the weird thing is, there's only like 2 examples. And one's fairly dull. It's just like colors. And the other one's the desert. So it's just weird that there aren't more choices. And also there's no clear explanation, what I've seen anyway, of how you make them.
They always do that sort of stuff, though. I mean, like, iOS has those dynamic wallpapers, and there's hardly any of them. And some of them are really weird. Like, you would not want it as a wallpaper, like the white one with a fish. It's like, it might look nice on your lock screen, but you can't have it with home icons on top of it. It looks super weird.
Yeah, exactly.
They've got two, don't they? They have the dynamic ones where it's like bubbles that move, which they did with the launch of the 5C. Because the background was coloured to match the background of the phone that you had, which was a nice touch. And that always animates. And then they have the live ones, which only animate when you do a force touch, which must have come with the 6 or 6S, whichever one came with 3D touch. Because then it's like the fish is there, then you push your finger down and then it swims a little bit and it goes back.
Yeah.
The
I'm just
smoke.
looking through mine.
That's super weird.
Oh yeah, you got dynamic, yeah. Then you got the live ones, which are it's not a
But
huge
they've
amount of
hard I
space.
don't think they've ever added any new ones.
No.
So I imagine this will be the same. It's like, yep, they're the two. That was a fun feature. Glad we spent engineering resource on that.
I know.
Well,
I
it
love
won't be
the.
an open standard that you can make your own. I mean, someone will probably reverse engineer it, but
I
I
love
wouldn't
the fact
expect
they've
that
got
there's going to be a
a.
way to do it.
I love the fact they've got the sort of HD version of the Earth now. You know, like the original one that came out when it first came out. But
Yeah, that's nice.
yeah, that install looks like it's finished, and my home bridge is up and running. That's the one thing, you know, this sort of upgrade experience. And I will talk about it with the phones and stuff. But it was a bit glitchy with my laptop, and it was, to be fair, a little glitchy with this iMac. So what's happened with my iMac quickly was that I've just got this little 21.5-inch iMac that I've had for since what 2011. I think I bought it on eBay secondhand, and it just sits on my desk and it acts as the iTunes hub, and it acts as the home bridge. So just does all the server stuff, and it's got all the media drives plugged into. It's got a couple of big media drives plugged into it, and it has like loads of rip films and all that stuff. And that just sits there, and it's been pretty good. But it's an old, it's 2011, so it's an old processor. It doesn't run, it wouldn't have run Mojave. It's got two big, I can't remember how many terabyte drives plugged into it to do all the storage. It's got a normal hard drive, and it started to get really sluggish over the years. Launching Safari would like take 20 seconds, which is ridiculous. And just starting up was a bloody nightmare. And what I noticed recently was that it was like a weird television effect where something glitches. And you get like a sort of lots of weird color pixels just sort of flicker across the screen. And just like stuff corrupts. It's really weird. And it will happen like if you move the mouse and stuff. And the other day, what happened was it was like some weird virus. All of the text disappeared from all the menus, and all of the content disappeared off iTunes. So when you went to the when you went and launched the iTunes app,
Encouraging.
So I was in iTunes and everything's there. And it was a Tuesday, and Tuesday is normally in my US account, it's like the film release day. It's the big films come out. So I do a few clicks on the store icon because that makes it refresh, and it refreshed and everything went blank. But the surrounding was there, the sort of chrome of the window was there and everything, and the drop downs were there, but there was no text. Everything was blank. It was like, okay, that's a bit weird. Go up to the menus, all the menus are blank. It's like, what the hell? So it was just this weird corruption thing. So I just figured, okay, this thing's dying on its ass. I'm not going to be able to run the latest operating system anyway. It's 7 years old, and it's got a hard drive, and it's horrific. So I looked up. So I started looking. I've obviously just bought a new MacBook, just bought the iPhone and the watch, and expensive few months. I thought I'm not going to just do what I'd normally do and go, I'll get a Mac, an iMac Pro or something. But let's just go and replace this really cheap machine with a super expensive one that just sits on the desk and never gets used. That would be the normal Jason thing to do. So this time, especially with new iPads coming, I thought, no, I'm going to be careful. So I went to the refurbished site because I did the usual, went to the Apple app or went to the website and started looking at iMacs. And their system's very clever because, yes, I have got I did replace it with a 21.5. I didn't go for the 27 just because they're super, much more expensive, and it will just sit on my desk. But I didn't want to buy a brand new 21.5 because I thought that would be a waste. But they're very clever with their configurator. You go in and pick the lowest priced option, right? Buy, and then it takes you to the next screen, and then it's that whole temptation thing, the whole upsell of, oh, for another £100, you could just increase that processor a little bit. Oh, let's just try that. And for another couple of £100, or probably more, you can upgrade the memory. Well, let's do that as well. And then all of a sudden, you've got down to the bottom, and you've just priced up like a £3,000 machine. And then you start thinking, well, if I'm going to spend £3,000, maybe I should get an iMac Pro, which is another grand. And it just starts getting into stupid mode. So I went to the refurbished site and just looked up the options there. And I've never done, I don't know if you have, I've never done it before.
No.
But I know they're basically at almost like as new machines. They take them, they remove any damage, they replace any parts, they test them, they give it a year's warranty. It's packaged up. Interestingly, it's packaged up in the original boxing and everything. But the little sort of box that you get with the keyboard and stuff in actually says refurbished, sort of printed on it. Like it's like a brand, it's like a, it's not like we're reselling this to you as if it's brand new. We've almost made a brand of the refurbished, but everything is packaged up really nicely. And so I looked up the specs, and obviously you have to pick a predefined machine. My previous one had I think half a terabyte drive and 12 gig of RAM and a bloody 2 point something processor, 7 years old. So I was looking through the list, and I wanted to get something at least with the same memory, but the only options really were 8 or 16. So I went for a 16 gig. I went for a half a terabyte SSD because I thought, screw these Fusion drives or screw anything physical anymore. Yeah, but I'm not, you know, but the options to go higher were just too expensive. And I think I paid, if you get rid of the VAT, it was about 1,200 quid, 1,250 quid. And it came next day, you know. So I got, and it's a 4K screen, so it's a nice screen. It's ridiculously fast. And it came, yeah, really nice packaging. You know, the screen was covered. It looks immaculate. It's got a year's warranty. It was really awesome. Brand new keyboard, brand new mouse. So I wouldn't do it for a laptop because I want a specific spec of a laptop.
Yeah.
But for something like that, or if it was a machine for the kids or something for their
room. Well, sometimes, though, you get the specific specs on there because you still get, you know, built to order ones that get sent back within 14 days and stuff like that. So occasionally you do get a good deal there.
But what I love about the process when it works really smoothly is the migration process. Now, this was a little bit glitchy, and to be fair, this is like a 7-year-old machine. You know, it's got 7 years of shit on it that have never been, you know, there's loads of apps on there right now that when I put High Sierra on it, they all come up with that sort of no entry sign because they're so bloody old. I need to do a complete clear out of all the crap. So the process wasn't super smooth. You know, I plugged in the drive, one of these external drives that had the Time Machine backup, and on the setup it said, do you want to restore it, and went through all that process. When it restarted after it had done all the restore, it just wouldn't boot. I had like a Apple logo and a full progress bar for an hour, just sat there. So I realized it was fucked up, basically. So I wiped it, redid it. And this time I went into the actual operating system, the default operating system, and then did a restore with Migration Assistant. And that worked perfectly. But where these things just get really frustrating is they don't tell you what you need to do in that case. So obviously when I set the machine up, it says, you know, create an administrator account. So I create my normal username, my normal password, the whole setup. We go through migration, and now it says, right, which user accounts do you want to migrate? And there's two, me and my wife, although she doesn't really use it anymore. But it wouldn't let me migrate mine, even though there was a merge option or replace option. I couldn't flick it. I couldn't click the option. So I was stuffed. So basically, I had to create another account, which was an admin, delete my account, go in as the admin account, and then do the migration, and then everything worked fine. So it was a little frustrating. But what I love about it is, you know, Migration Assistant, I think when I used to do PCs years ago, when we used to have VAIO laptops and all that stuff, we used to do a disk clone. That was how we did it, because there was no option on Windows. So you literally...
Although that gives you problems as well, because if you have different drivers and different stuff, it causes major issues.
but you clone it
and then suddenly your drivers don't work. It's like, oh, shit.
Yeah, but that was traditionally how we used to do it, sort of. I mean, eventually I would you know, do complete new setups, just leave a day and just basically go through the whole process again. But that was how I typically restore a machine or whatever. With Migration Assistant, really what it's doing is copying files, isn't it? It's migrating those files across. It's not doing a block copy of the disk. It's not doing like a clone of the disk. It is copying over your home directories and your VAR directories or whatever. It's doing all that stuff at a sort of file level. But it's pretty clever. I mean, this is restarted. Obviously, I've just put the latest OS on it, but it had High Sierra. It restarted. All my apps that were running before were running because effectively it's the same setup. Homebridge was running. My terminal was up showing the last stuff that was there. And it's got the log of Homebridge going. And it just works. iTunes fires up. You know, everything's there. And that's when it works really well, which it does 90% of the time, to be fair. The whole Mac sort of upgrade process is just very nice. And Time Machine is, you know, something that should have existed on Windows and for Windows users for years. I love it, you know. Very nice.
I can't say that I've ever used it before, because whenever I get a new MacBook or new Mac, I just set it up from scratch because I generally want to tinker with it, and I always have this fear, which is probably unfounded, of copying stuff over and then some setting getting trapped there that shouldn't be there, that's like residual from a long time ago. So I tend not to bother doing it. I just do it from scratch, because I also don't buy them very regularly. I very rarely upgrade my Macs because I don't need to. So I will next get a Mac probably when the Mac Pro comes out next year, because I'll swap my what is effectively a 2013 Mac Pro for the 2019 model. But I doubt I'll upgrade my laptop for a very long time because I just don't use it enough. So I don't have that problem so much. With iPhones, though, I used to always set them up from scratch for the same reason. I didn't like having copy everything over. I liked having the opportunity to reinstall apps and sort of have a good look through and go, well, I don't use that, let's not bother with installing those ones again. But I stopped doing that mainly because of the Apple Watch. I didn't mind doing it, but the Apple Watch with the activity stuff, if you did it from scratch, you lost it all. And so then I got into the habit of restoring from previous backups. And now you don't need to do that anymore because now all that stuff's stored in the cloud again. But I still just do the restore because it's a lot easier. But I guess that's with an annual cycle, it's much easier doing that. But with the Mac, as it's like maybe every 3 or 4 years that I bother doing it, I just do it from scratch.
Yeah, I mean, I did it. I tend to do it now. I don't do the from scratch stuff only because I've got so much crap on my machine in terms of stuff I've installed that I just hate to have to go through the process again. What I really should do is document or have a script or something. I know a few people that have done that sort of stuff where they've almost like scripted their, you know, installs, and they have like a little guide they keep in Dropbox so that as soon as Dropbox is sort of synced, you've got this little guide that goes through the process. But no, I probably should do something like that at some point. But I'll tell you what's really nice now is because we've sort of made this move to SSDs, it's just the speed. You know, I think it used to be sort of MacBook to MacBook was what, like a day, like 8 hours. You know,
It
would arrive and then that's the rest of your day gone. You know, forget it. Now it's like an hour and a half. You know, we're talking about 1 terabyte drive, and it's like an hour and a half and it's done. You know, first of all, it'll come up and sort of say, you know, it will do that typical Windows type thing. It's not as bad as Windows where it would say, you know, 2 days, 4 days, 20 minutes. No, 6 minutes, 100 days. With the Mac, it would say something like 4 hours, and then suddenly it would go 2 hours, then it would go 30 minutes. And it's like, holy shit, you know, and it was just done. And it was pretty good. I mean, I think Dropbox you always have to log in again to, but you can point it at the same folder and it will resync itself and work itself out. Yeah. And a few things you have to log back into. But otherwise,
shit.
You don't use Dropbox?
No, Christ, no. No. It just eats up so much processor. I stopped using it a while ago. There was some privacy reason why I stopped using it. But then I noticed that my machine was running a hell of a lot faster once I got rid of it as well.
Oh, really?
I just do everything through iCloud Drive because it's built in.
Yeah, iCloud is nice. I should consolidate stuff like that because
these little things that happen over time. Like, I think that's probably when I dropped Dropbox is when I got my new Mac Pro. It's like, well, let's try it without Dropbox. And then, you know, just did it from scratch, just used iCloud. It's like, yep,
yeah,
that works fine. That's all I need. The only issue that I have with that is that I have a household documents folder, and I use the Doxy scanner, which we talked about previously, to scan most letters and things that come in, and I sort them into nice little folders. So if I want to look at, you know, my driving license renewal or something like that, I know I can go into household documents, vehicles, my registration plate, and then it's there. The only issue I have is that I can't share that with my wife easily because iCloud does not support any kind of sharing, really, which is annoying. Like, I would like the option to have folders that I can share with my family and it just syncs them somehow. But that isn't an option at the moment. So I'm still trying to work out a solution to that problem because I would like her to have access to those documents, but I don't want to have to buy like a Drobo to do it. I don't want to have to install Dropbox to do it. It's like, ugh. Every year I hold out that WWDC they're going to have iCloud family sharing type thing. But
yeah, surprising they don't do that. It's surprising they don't do that with the whole family thing and the fact that you can share storage, that they don't have that sort of. It seems like a natural. Maybe it'll come. You know, it seems like a natural thing.
I'm sure it's going to come at some point. That's why I keep holding out. Occasionally I look at what solutions there are, but I never find any that are anywhere near as good as what I want. So
yeah, it's almost like I need to do there's no time for housekeeping that much at the moment. I mean, I'm just going through these drives, these two big drives I've got that I bought like 5 years ago, and looking through what's on them, and you sort of find old photos and old stuff and, you know, old files and SQL Server installs and all kinds of crap. And it's like, I've sort of lost, with the amount of data and storage we've got now and all of this stuff everywhere, I've sort of lost that housekeeping that I used to be able to do because there wasn't very much. You know, you had a small drive and you had a folder of images and that was pretty much it. Whereas now there's just terabytes of data, and I'm just loaded up the application screen on this iMac to see what stuff was coming up as, you know, with big no entry things through it. And there's just so much crap on there. you know, just you can tell, you know, when you look at an applications folder and you can tell by the design of the icons how old the apps are, because they've got that sort of lozenge look. And, you know, they look like some of the early icons.
I know exactly what you mean.
It's just like you look at them and go, oh my God, there's some really old stuff in here. I need to go through this. Just really awful icon designs. but let's talk about the iPhone process, the ordering process and stuff like that.
Ooh, yes. Exciting times. So I think we were both in the same boat in terms of ordering, and we were both done by 8:05 on the day.
Using the app as usual.
Exactly like we talked about in our pre-order guide, which we helpfully released just after the pre-order. I didn't quite manage to get that audio posted before.
but that trick is brilliant. Exactly. That trick is brilliant. That trick, you know, rather than going through that navigation, stick it in your favorites in the app, just go straight to your favorites, click it, you're done. Yeah. Add to basket. I can't remember what time it came out. It was pretty quick this year, wasn't it? It came up quite quickly.
Yeah, it's about 3 minutes past. So just keep it in the app. If it says it's coming up soon, just swipe it away. So it force quits, reopen it again.
Yeah.
Just keep doing that every 5 seconds, you'll get in. And then
I think it was doing something on focus as well, because every time I just flicked it. I did do the thing because I didn't want to go, oh, I think it is doing something on focus, and it wasn't. Yeah. But every time I came back, it did seem to flicker. So it seemed to be doing something. But it was so much smoother experience. I did it in the middle of a field. I don't know where you were doing it from, but I was walking the dog because I was walking my mother-in-law's dog as well. So I'm literally in the middle of Salisbury Plain. And as I'm going around, I'm thinking, please have a signal, please have a signal. And it was fine. And it came up and I got it all sorted. But I had to, talk about what you ordered. I ordered the two phones, two watches, but I did manage to get them in the same order. You know, normally what I'd have done is gone phone and watch for me and then phone and watch for my wife as two separate orders. But I managed to get it all in one order, which was quite cool. So, and I did that thing, the prep, because of the, I think I might have talked about this on the last one with the bank, because HSBC are an absolute nightmare because they're fraud detection shit.
Yeah.
I added a different card, which I knew I wouldn't have the problem with, to my Apple Pay, so that when I did the Apple Pay thing, I could put it on that card and it would go through fine. So it all went pretty smoothly.
Yeah, mine was very smooth. The only issue I had was that I was still umming and ahhing about what watch I was going to buy, whether I was going to get the stainless steel with the Milanese loop, the stainless steel with the sport band, or whether I was going to go for the black or the gold, or what I was going to do. And in the end, I just stuck with what I'd originally said. I went for the 44 stainless steel with Milanese loop. And I like the loop. Loop's nice. I wouldn't wear it every day, but it's it'll be nice for smarter occasions. But I'm very happy that we'll probably talk about the watch first. We'll do them in order of keynote. But I had a lot of worries about bands and how they were all going to work, which I talked about at length last time, so I won't go on about it again. But the upshot is that all the bands are fully compatible. There's no... I was expecting that the 42mm ones would look slightly different and not quite work the same due to the language on Apple's website, but they're all fine. So I've got my original Series 0 leather, saddle brown leather strap back on, and it looks wonderful. It looks like it was made for this watch. It looks exactly the same as if I went and bought a new one today. Although I say that, actually, at the bottom, it is ever so slightly, it pokes out. So I could be wrong on this.
Well, I've just
noticed it's ever so slight, not much, not noticeable. It has a little bit at the tops as well where it pokes out the sides. So I guess the 44 Milanese and the 42 Milanese are different. They are just subtly changed.
Well, interesting. I'm just trying, because I bought a couple of Nike bands to play around with, because I quite liked the idea of, I usually wear a metal band. You know, I bought the 44 stainless black. I switched to black after the first, I think for the Series 2, because the normal stainless steel, I love the color, but the micro scratches just piss me off. Just sort of seeing them after a year. The black, you just don't notice them, whether they're there or not. You just don't see them. So it always looks immaculate. So I went with that and I've got used to it and I really like the black, but obviously I got it with the, you know, a default black sports strap or whatever. So I bought a couple of straps because I normally wear the metal one. But I just wanted to try a couple of different straps because, you know, you can return this stuff. It's quite easy. So I bought a couple from Apple and I've just stuck one into my Series 3, just slid it in and it looks fine.
Yeah, so they are backwards compatible. That all works. Yeah. perfectly. It's just, I've only just noticed it now, which is annoying because I'm going to notice it all the time now. It just ever so slightly pokes out the 42mm strap on the 44 watch. But it's so weird. Slight, you just won't notice it. And it's all because of the curvature, because obviously the curve is much more pronounced on the new watch screens. That's why there's the difference. It's nothing to do with the width.
Yes.
The width is the same, but you're more curved, which was my whole thing in worrying about this. And it looks like I was right to worry, damn it.
Yeah, you're right. I've just noticed it on my...
Apologies to everyone listening.
I've just noticed it on my metal strap as well on the Series 4 that it's the curve that gets you.
Yeah. It's only slight though, isn't it? It doesn't look bad. You wouldn't notice it normally.
Yeah. To be fair, the metal band I'm wearing is a knockoff. It's not the actual Apple one because I'm too scared to wear that damn thing. It's crazy and it is ridiculous. When I bought the first black one, I bought it with the metal strap, with that ridiculously expensive metal strap because I just loved that strap. And, you know, the normal stainless steel ones scuff the hell, but the black one's anodized or whatever, so it's even worse. So you're worried about scuffing it because it will have big, nice big silver lumps in it, whatever, you know, you'll see the stainless steel underneath, or the true color of the stainless steel. So I wore it, rarely. It would be like special occasions. And then if I'm doing anything in the garden or whatever, it would definitely be another strap going on. So I ended up buying these sort of knockoff straps from Amazon, some of which look different. They're a different design. They look more like traditional watch straps. And some are terrible and they go straight back if they're terrible, but actually some. So I bought one recently for this that's literally a copy of the Apple one. And it looks like the Apple one. You know, it doesn't have that same clever mechanism to change the bits, change the size of it. But it's a clever little system where you sort of push it and it's got like a spring. So you just sort of push it and it springs out. It's almost the same, but it's not exactly that mechanism. But when it's on your wrist and it's on the watch, apart from the little sticky out bit now I've noticed, it looks amazing. It looks exactly like the Apple one. It has the same brushed steel sort of finish to it. The clasp is the same. It looks really, really nice. And I don't care if I damage it because obviously it's 20 quid or something. I can replace it. So I'll probably just get rid of the other one because I don't wear it. It just is sitting in a drawer with value attached to it that I will never wear because I'm afraid of damaging the damn thing. And this just looks exactly the same. So I've sort of got into this thing of buying a few of these straps because, you know, it doesn't really matter. You know, they just get scuffed or whatever. But I might send these Nike ones back because I don't think I'll wear them. I got the white one with the little black.
I like the Nike one. I had the Nike one because I gave my mum my Series 2 Apple Watch. And she wore it for a bit. She bought herself a Nike band for it. And then she gave it back to me. She's like, I don't really need it. I'm not getting on with it. It's a bit too... Ironically, she'd love the Series 4. But she preferred her old Fitbit. So she went back to that. But she gave me the Nike strap because obviously she didn't need it anymore. And I like it. I like the little holes on it. It's nice if you're doing a workout. I mean, I rarely do. Yeah. But if I do, it's one that I will tend to use for, like if I'm going on the treadmill or something for a little bit. It's quite nice just because the aerating holes, you don't get like quite as sweaty under there as you often do with the sport bands. I never like to use the leather bands when working out, obviously, because they go all disgusting. Sweat and such. But the polylastomer, whatever the hell they call it, those ones I find work really well, but you can still get a little bit unpleasant under there, but you can just rinse them very easily. But the Nike ones are ever so slightly more comfortable.
I might get rid of one because I bought the white one with the sort of black holes, which sounds really
that's
weird.
The one I've got.
Black holes. And then I bought the black one, and I might keep one, but I think having two is a bit extravagant because I'm never going to.
They had one a while ago that I really wanted. It was blue. It was like a dark blue, and I think it had white holes.
It
was not available anywhere. Like, it was online, but it was out of stock. And I saw one at my local Apple store in the display case, and they were like, yeah, that's the only one. We've never seen them. They've never arrived. It seemed to be like this whole thing. Like, I think they were announced, like, sent to retail stores, but then never actually released, because I've never known anyone get one. And now they're discontinued and disappeared. So I don't know if there was some problem making them. But it was a shame, because it was a really nice color. It was a lovely blue, like a fairly light blue with these white holes. It was really nice.
But what did you think about the whole packaging?
Yeah, that was interesting. So previous watches used to come basically bundled with the strap already on. The one that I got last year, because I went for the edition last year, that one was slightly differently packaged because it comes as a cube. and it had the strap on and it was like curled round its charger that it came with. But this year they've gone for just having the watch in its own little snug sort of polystyrene case. Sock, exactly. Like one of those old iPod Nano socks, which was kind of interesting. And then the strap's actually separate underneath, which I guess makes it a hell of a lot easier for packaging. But also begs the question, why are they so limited on what straps you can choose this year? Because in previous years, you've been able to choose like combinations, like maybe nine different combinations, like the stainless steel with this sport band, or the stainless steel with that leather one, or that loop, or whatever it might be. Whereas this year, it was, for the stainless steel at least, you get the Milanese loop, or you get this one sport band colour. It's that one or the other.
Yeah.
And there's no non-cellular option either, which I don't think we noticed when we discussed it last week, but I heard someone else mentioning it. And it's true. You can't get a non-cellular stainless steel watch. They just don't make them. The same with the edition last year. So I think it's interesting they've done it that way, and I can appreciate the mechanics of it. I mean, I don't really care either way, but it's just a shame that with them improving the way that it works so much, you'd think that they'd be able to give you more choice. Like, ideally, I would like to buy, like, go through, like, some sort of, like, wizard that sounds horrible, where you buy the chassis and, like, the watch, and then you choose which strap you want from all of the straps that they own, and they bundle it together. So it's basically 50 quid off the price that it is normally with the sport band, and then you add the strap, and that puts up. You can't buy it without the strap. That seems fair enough, although it's a bit silly at this point, bearing in mind how many straps we all have. I would totally have bought mine without a strap if I could have, because I don't need any.
So would I, yeah.
But it does seem a bit odd that they're limiting it when they've packaged it in such a clever way that you can easily swap the band out. Maybe that's something they're going to do next time. Maybe this is like a first phase test. But yeah, I liked the packaging. It was, as packaging goes, it was nice.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, the packaging lends itself to the fact that they should be able to do that thing, because it comes in that sort of weird surround that you sort of open up and it unfolds like
nice
a weird
colorful
Chinese takeaway or something. it sort of comes apart like one of those little things you get noodles in. You'd think that they'd be able to have that choice, but maybe that's something that's going to come.
Yeah, I would guess so. I mean, it's that's how it is. But the watch itself is it's beautiful.
Beautiful. Oh, stunning.
A great
yeah.
upgrade. A really, really great upgrade for the watch. That extra screen space. I hadn't noticed it for a little while, because once you start it up, you do the usual process.
And it's super fast. The startup's super quick, isn't it?
It's much quicker. Much, much quicker.
Yeah.
But it does that bit, and you're not really aware of the screen. You're aware a little bit in the tutorial-y bit that it does now, because when you scroll through it, it's got some weird rounding issues in the bottom corners, because obviously the screen is more round. But it was only when it asked me to put in my PIN number that I was like, oh, holy shit, this is a big screen. You remember the first version of the watch? They made the PIN entry quite small and subtle, and it was quite hard to actually tap it. And then I think it was WatchOS 2, they went for that big blocky square, and it's like, wow, that looks bigger and much easier to tap. And this is like that times three.
Yeah.
Just way bigger.
Yeah. And it's like the... When I glance at it, because I've got that new watch face on it, the Infograph or whatever I'm playing around with. And even though the design has changed, so like we said, it's a bit curvier, but it still has that curve on the screen going downwards. You know, it's still a curved screen going around to the edges of the device. But what's weird is when you look at it sometimes sort of on your wrist at an angle, it looks much flatter. It looks like, because the sort of, I think it's a combination of the screen anyway, because the text and everything just looks like it's literally sitting on top. But if I glance down to it, it doesn't, because of the size of it and the fact that it goes to the edges, it just looks like a much flatter design, which I like. It just looks really, really
nice. It doesn't look
chunky.
Yes.
When
you put them side by side, it does not look smaller in terms of thickness, in my opinion.
No.
They look the same. I can't notice any difference on my wrist in terms of weight or feeling or anything like that. But you're absolutely right that it looks smaller, which is weird.
Yeah. It's really, it's a stunning screen. It really is stunning. Especially when you do, obviously it's a black background, black design. It's very difficult, like you say, to see stuff. But as soon as you get something that fills the screen, like a photo or anything like that, you just see immediately how nice it is.
Even having the rounded corners just makes that whole experience better. Like if you switch over to the photo face, it looks nicer than it did on the old ones. A, because the old ones had that ridiculously huge bezel, but also because it's rounded, it just looks like it fits much better.
Oh, it's lovely. Yeah, I've just fired up a face now, yeah.
Whereas
it's just
if you do
really
that on an old watch, it looks horrendous. You remember they announced it when the watch was like that 6 months before it launched, but it didn't launch with it. It had gone. They must have realized it was a bad idea, and then everyone was like, where's the photo face? And then they added it almost begrudgingly to watchOS 2. Because it killed the illusion of the watch. But now it's much better because it looks really nice.
Yeah, it is really nice. And just navigating through apps and through things, everything is just easier to touch, easier to use.
Yeah. And they always say that with the speed stuff, oh, it's much faster this year, blah, 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 blah. And a lot of the time it's been bollocks.
Yeah.
Well, it has been faster, but it's still not great, especially with third-party apps. This watch, genuinely, if you've not tried it before, person listening, then it is literally it opens straight away. Like, I've not seen a spinner once. Even when I've opened like multiple apps one after the other as quickly as possible, like the Hue app or Things or even my Land Rover app, which shows me where my car is, all of those just open instantly and are ready. There's no waiting time. And those ones aren't necessarily ones I had complications for either. I purposely went for ones that didn't have complications in case they were being preloaded to get the watch face up to date. And it's still just bang, straight in. No problem at all. So it is a vast improvement.
It does feel like, I mean, there are still some issues with some third-party apps that are just shit. You know, the ones where where you go and launch it, it says, oh, please open the app on the iPhone first and all this sort of bollocks. But when you're flicking between I mean, it almost feels like it's no longer a tethered device. You know, it's always had that thing of it's this tethered thing that relies on your iPhone all the time and has some connection to it. Just the way stuff launches now, the speed of which apps come up, just the speed of which you can do stuff with it. It's just like it feels like it's its own device, especially with the cellular. You know, it is something that you feel like you could just go out now and forget your phone and not bother with your phone, and you can still do the basics that you need to do, or still do more than the basics, but you can still get stuff done. You know, it feels like it's a proper device, especially when you've got AirPods or headphones, and you could just Bluetooth straight to it and you could do calls. And the calls are much nicer now when you're just using the sort of, what was that, the detective show? What was the cartoon?
I've forgotten. Oh, Dick Tracy.
Dick Tracy, yeah. I completely forgot it. Dick Tracy mode, where you're trying to do calls, is much clearer now. Not that I ever do that much, but when I do, normally I'm away from my phone and I just need to answer it quickly.
They weren't kidding when they said that speaker is louder.
It is very much louder,
Siri is uncomfortably loud. Like, I've not yet found a way to turn Siri's volume down. But I need to, because she is far too loud. Like, the volume she was previously was perfect. Now
but
she's
also,
too loud.
But also, she's too verbose. There needs to be a setting where, based on the time of night, you can dial, because what will happen is I'll walk into the bedroom or whatever, because I've normally fallen asleep downstairs or whatever. Everything's turned off. I come upstairs and I want to turn my little bedside lamp on just so I can see where I'm going and everything. So I'll speak, you know, turn the bedside lamp on or something. And it's like, the bedside lamp is now on. And you're like, oh, Jesus Christ, I don't need you to say all that stuff. And it's very, very annoying. But yeah, I mean, it's incredibly loud and much clearer. Siri still pisses me off half the time in terms of understanding basic words. But I am finding
that you and Luke have this problem, but I never do. Oh. She gets me perfectly every time.
I need to make a note of what they are sometimes, because sometimes it's just really... One of them, I think I posted a screenshot, it was playing around with Siri shortcuts. What was it? Something to do with activate shutter or something. And it was like the recommended word to use for the shortcut. It wasn't understanding me when I was actually saying it to the damn thing, which was incredibly frustrating.
I noticed something about that. With those like Siri shortcut recording bits where you add a phrase, you can tap it once it's dictated it, and it will show you all of the other words that it could have been, like if it's misunderstood you, so you can correct it.
Oh, okay.
So if you like, I don't know. So I made a shortcut, which I put on Twitter, you've seen it, because I discovered the Irish Siri voice, which is new in iOS 12.
Love it.
Originally, I put it on the female one, and then I put it over to the male one, and it just sounded like Dougal from Father Ted, and I was like, oh, I can't not have Siri have this voice. So I enabled that, and then I made a shortcut called "What are your plans today?" And then it goes, "I've got to kick Bishop Brennan up the arse," just because it's one of my favourite episodes of Father Ted. And so if I say, "What are your plans today?" that's what Siri replies with. But when I recorded that phrase, I could tap on it and see like all different things, like what are our plans, and like different words that it thought I might have meant, like plants instead of plans, like that. So you can choose which one, and I guess that's all being fed back in order to improve Siri's literacy, basically, because I've long said that this feels like a Trojan horse move to the next stage of being able to add actual customization to Siri in terms of... So I've got a app where I log the amount of time I spend playing computer games for my website that I wrote myself. It's not like an App Store one. And if I want to say, hey, log 1.2 hours playing Magic the Gathering Arena, I can't, because it can't understand the 1.2 hours. Right. I have to set a recording of log time for Magic the Gathering Arena on PC, and then she knows to open the app to that specific game and that specific thing, so I can type in the hours, but I can't add parameters in such a way. Annoyingly, you can't do it in the Shortcuts app either, even though it's parameterized. You can't have inputs and outputs for Siri Shortcuts, but that's a whole other rant. So my theory is that this whole ability for you to record your own phrases and for them to be transcribed to text so you could see it and make sure it's correct and you can change it if you want to is going to train it much, much, much quicker than anything else, because the number of phrases and words she'll learn are much wider, because previously you've obviously got very narrow focus on what words you can say to her and what you can use. So yeah. I'm hopeful that we'll see like a big jump in performance over the next coming months, really.
I hope so. The thing that mostly frustrates me about Siri is when you try and use it to do like a response to a message or send a message, and especially when it's a long message and she's literally picked up every single word perfectly except one, and it's like you got to go in now and change it because it's not the sort of word. It's not like you said and she said an, and you can sort of let it get away with it because you're sending a message to your wife and she's going to know what you mean, whatever. But it's like a completely different word. It's completely cocked up. And then you've got to go in and edit it. And especially when you're doing that on the watch, because it's even more of a pain because you can't easily edit it. So you've just got to cancel it and then you just give up and forget it. And it's that sort of stuff. It's just that little bit where she just messes up one little time is what frustrates me. But, you know, it has got better. And on the watch, it's super fast.
One of the things they could improve with that is, you know how when you, by default, if you send an email, it says sent from my iPhone?
Yeah.
I've long thought that any message you dictate with Siri through iMessage or email should just have like an icon or a little bit of text that's just slotted in somewhere to say this message was dictated.
Yes.
Just so that people, it just adds a bit more context. Because then if a word's wrong, you're like, okay, I get it. But I guess they don't want to do that because it shows that Siri can be wrong, and they want people to correct it so that they can learn from it, I guess. Because, I mean, you can already teach Siri a little bit, because you can tap any phrase on like the Siri page that pops up, like a blue underline, and then you can rename it. So you can actually change things that you've said. So I think it gets some training from that, but my assumption is that this new one will be way better.
What would be nice is if the instructions for editing were a bit... the verbalization for editing was better. So I remember years ago, there was a product called Dragon Dictate that I remember playing around with on the PC. And what was nice about it was that you could, this was before speech recognition was in Windows, it was like an add-on, and you could dictate something. So you could start writing a letter. And if you said, you know, dear so-and-so, thanks for your correspondence, and it would get, well, thanks for your letter or whatever, or email, and it would get it wrong. You could say, correct that, and it would go back. And then, you know, it would assume you meant correct that word, and it would go back and change it. Or you could say, delete that, or backspace or something like that. If you try to do that with Siri, she just, you know, you start saying, yeah, what do you want? You know, do you need anything from the shop? And it's got shop wrong. So you say backspace. It says backspace. This is when I first tried it. It's like delete, no delete. It's like, oh shit. Because it'll understand things like question mark, and it'll understand full stop and things like that. But there's other, I just wish it would be a bit more understanding of correcting stuff. Because when you're dictating live, And those words are coming up live, and you've done a really long message, and then it's got one word wrong, it would be really nice to say delete that, or, you know, delete word. And it would mean, you know, it would go, okay, I'm going to assume you meant the last word because that's what you said. You know, that's the assumption you would mean. Or delete sentence, or delete paragraph, or something like that. You know,
now wiping iPhone. Really...
Sending to all your contacts. What? You know, it's like, or the other funny thing is when you've, I can't remember what it was. It was a while ago when I was doing something and I was trying to send a message and something happened and I was like swearing and it comes up with all these expletives suddenly. It's like, oh shit, don't send it. Oh my God. But yeah, I mean, it'd be nice. It just seems like every time I try and use Siri to try and go, okay, I'm going to try and do this, it just gets the odd thing wrong, and it's quite frustrating. One quick thing before I forget, with the Irish voice thing, because I switched the Irish voice and really liked it. I made the mistake during the Mojave beta of switching to the Irish, not mistake, but I've learned that this was a mistake on my part. So I switched it to the Irish voice on the Mac because I really wanted to use the Irish voice.
I never used Siri on the Mac.
And it sounded like shit. You know, it sounded like the worst impersonation of an Irish accent you've ever seen in life. And what I've learned or realized happens is it's downloading the voice in the background, which it doesn't tell you, and it's using a simulated voice in the meantime. Because what happened when you did that tweet about the Irish, and I thought, okay, I'm going to try it again. Love it on the phone, love it on the watch, really nice. Activated it on the Mac, and it said, it just was just terrible. You know, it's like, hey, doofus, what's the time? And it's like, oh my God, the worst accent ever. And I just thought, I wonder if it's downloading something. So I just left it. Came back to it about half an hour later, whenever I remembered, and tried it, and voice is perfect. So I just wish they'd say that.
On iOS as well, because when you tap it, it says, hi, I'm Siri.
Yeah.
That was a terrible accent. And then it says downloading, because it has to download the full voice. I don't know what happens if you try and use Siri at that point, because I didn't try it, but I imagine you might get a similar type thing.
Yeah, but it is a lovely voice. I mean, it's just very...
Yeah.
Nice. I just prefer it. It's much more soothing, and you know, it's just a nicer voice. So, yeah,
I
massive.
I used to use American Siri because I always thought that she sounded better than British Siri, just because that's the one that they've always spent the most time on. But I sometimes use British Siri. I alternated between the male and female voices sometimes, but I've had the female American one pretty much the whole time. But now I've gone over to male Irish. And it cracks me up every. I shouldn't be laughing at accents. I'm old enough to not be laughing at amusing accents. But there's something wonderful about saying, turn on the dining crimps. All right, that's done for you. I forget that I've done it, and it cracks me up every time I laugh.
But has it got? It'd be nice if it had, like, you know, little colloquialisms of Irish, you know, the way Irish people speak or whatever. Just have that little. Do you know what I mean? That would be really nice.
It reminds us rather than arse. Which is insane, but...
it reminds me of the old TomTom app and the TomTom device. I think it was on the app when you used to be able to have Yoda doing your voice, doing your directions, or Darth Vader doing your directions
for a long time. Yeah.
That was awesome. You used to
record your own as well, because I recorded one for a friend where I did all the directions wrong. So instead of the first exit at the roundabout, take the fifth exit at the roundabout, or turn right in 300 meters instead of turn left in a mile.
Oh my God. That reminds me of the prank someone did. One of these pranks where the guy got hold of his parents' phone and changed the shortcuts. So no was yes. And then sent them a message, an iMessage going, hey, can I have a party at the house while you're away? The mother responds, yes. Oh, great. Thanks. Yes, I meant yes. Because she's trying to say no, and it keeps shortcut correcting it to yes.
Yeah.
It was absolutely, you had to be there, but it was magical. The other quick thing on the watch. Yeah, walkie-talkie was quite cool.
I haven't tried it out yet.
It's pretty neat. So basically the way it works is you add someone in, and then that person will get a message if they've got, obviously, supporting device and the OS on there, and it will say they want a walkie-talkie with you. You say yes or no, you're done. They're now in your list. You tap their icon, and there's a thing above the list of names that says available, which is your status. Mm-hmm. And basically the way that works is if you've got available on, then it acts like an instant walkie-talkie. So as soon as you tap my name and then you hold the talk button down and speak, I will instantly get a message from you. It will speak direct. You know, I'll get a little signal first, like a little bleep, and then it will literally speak out really loudly on that huge loudspeaker. If you set available to off, you can still get the message, but it's a bit like more like iMessages. So you'll get a little ping
Yeah,
you get and then you look and you look at the watch, and it will say someone's trying to walkie-talkie. You know, Hannah's trying to walkie-talkie with you, and you can say press to talk. And so that's quite nice, because I was wondering how that was going to work, if you could, you know, suddenly someone's in church or something, and you can suddenly send a walkie-talkie message. The only thing that's frustrating is that obviously people are playing with this feature, and when they go in, it recommends people that probably have got the OS installed or whatever. And so one of my clients added me, and I was like, no, we're not going
to
do that.
That's why I don't give my phone number to anyone. Yeah,
we are not doing walkie-talkie, no way. Well, this particular project, we've already got Slack. We've had Slack, WhatsApp, iMessage, email, phone calls, and now walkie-talkie as communication methods. No. And I'm like, yeah, we need to have a little bit of housekeeping
only.
With communication. Yeah, yeah. We need to reduce that down a little bit. But
see,
yeah,
I haven't actually used walkie-talkie mode, but I know how it works. It's actually very clever. So it actually it does a FaceTime audio call between you. That's practically always.
Oh.
Well, as soon as you press the button, it starts a FaceTime audio call.
And
it leaves it connected for about 2 minutes afterwards in case there's replies, and then it disconnects. But all it does is a FaceTime audio call, but it only transmits when you hold the button down. Which is super clever, because that's what makes it real time. It's not having to reconnect and send bits back and forth. It's just using what it already has, just stays connected. Which really, really fucked me off, because when I was reading The Verge's review of the new watch and watchOS 5, Dieter, I forget his name, first name is Dieter though, he was like, yeah, it's really great, but you can't use it one-handed, so if I've got a coffee, I can't press the button easily. I'm like, have a fucking FaceTime audio call then, if you want to speak to someone using it. He's like, oh, I have to use my nose to do it. And he's like doing it with his nose. He's like, I call this nose talkie or something like that.
Yeah, that's, I love it when people come up with stupid shit like that. It's just like, yeah, so I'm walking through Starbucks or whatever, walking out of Starbucks with a coffee, and I'm going to have a walkie-talkie conversation with someone.
Probably shouldn't be using walkie-talkie mode, should you?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's just, exactly. Just
so stupid.
Oh, idiots. But yeah. But otherwise, love it. It's definitely. I mean, if you're someone going from a series, if you're someone going from a non-cellular to this, it's great. Obviously, it's amazing. If you're someone going from Series 3 to this, you still will notice
still
the difference.
Amazing.
It is incredible. If you're going from a Series 0 or Series, I think my mum is on. I think I bought her a Series 2, aluminium. So I think
difference.
I think if she's goes from that, it is going to be incredible. The only other quick thing I've just remembered, speaking about old people. Sorry, Mum.
Full detection.
Is the full detection, which apparently is off by default if you're below 60.
That's right. 65.
But you can go into the settings and turn it on, and then it does give you about a million warnings saying, you know, this could be activated if you do exercise.
Yeah.
You know, so I haven't turned it on yet to try it, but I'm guessing if you try and do any CrossFit or anything that involves jumping or burpees or anything like that, it could suddenly be calling 999 for you. So you just want to be careful with that setting.
I will. There's no risk of that happening to me, so I will probably enable it. it really solidifies who they were aiming at. Because they never said that in the keynote. They never said anything about it being for specific ages. Which is also interesting, because it was clear that they're aiming the watch at the older people. Especially in America, where a lot of insurance companies now won't let you take out insurance unless you agree to take one of these smartwatches or a Fitbit or something, because they want to make sure that you are moving around and active. So Apple obviously wants to get in on that, because if an insurance company says, right, you need to have this fall detection watch on for the insurance to be valid, they're going to sell a shit ton of them.
Yeah.
So they never specifically said it's aimed at older people, though everyone was like, yeah, it's mainly for old people. But they even showed the picture of someone like on a stepladder, who is clearly under the age of 65. So that's a little bit misleading, because you'd have to have manually added the feature for that person. Otherwise, they'd fall off the ladder and they wouldn't send anything. So it's weird that, A, the feature is automatically enabled for old people, so that's clearly what they were targeting, but they didn't just come out and say that, and they showcased it working for someone where that's not the default.
Yeah.
To catch my drift. Bit weird, but...
The whole health thing is quite interesting, because I wonder, from the very beginning, it's almost like that was the pivot. It feels like it was like they did the first version of the watch. They sort of had an idea of how people would use it, but maybe people didn't use it the way they thought. I used it a lot for notifications. You know, it's handy to glance at it quickly for a notification. rather than get your phone out or whatever.
Basically, Fitbit tracker with notifications was
But as soon as I think it was when the Series 2 came out and they kicked in with the health stuff big time with the OS update, then all of a sudden, and now with, you know, we've got heart detection, we've got, I know it's not enabled yet, but we've got the ECG capability, we've got fall detection. They are fully in on this whole health thing, which is pretty amazing, really. And it's definitely
much looking forward to when they do non-invasive glucose monitoring. That'll be a game changer when that happens.
I love the workout. I know it's not a hardware feature necessarily, but the auto workout stuff is just amazing because I would never log a workout because I would always forget. Whereas now, 10 minutes into my walk, I get a little ping on the wrist. It comes up. I can log the workout. Even if I don't do it after 10 minutes, I can go into it towards the end of the walk, go into the workout app, and it will say, you know, we're assuming you're doing a walk for the last 40, 50 minutes. Do you want to log it? Press the button. You're done. It's logged. And then that goes, syncs up with all your health data. It's just really, really nice. The only thing I don't like is when I've got this personal training session, which I get every day, and I'm in the middle of one of these sessions. I think it was yesterday, and I'm nearly dying on my ass, basically, doing this stuff. And my watch pinged me and said, it's time to breathe. And I'm like, it said, it's time to breathe. You say, you can piss right off. I am trying to breathe right now and not have a heart attack.
I'm struggling.
I think I'm okay. But it is, it's a lovely device. And like I said to you, I think before they came out, when we were talking about what we wanted and stuff, the speed thing for me was, I said, if it's twice as fast or it's faster, that's going to be a big thing for me. Because I always used to find that frustrating, and it's just the only challenge I've got, and I think a lot of people have had with this damn new watch face, is finding out what complications to put in it because there's so bloody many.
I was literally going to say we should talk about the complications because I'm using the circular infographic one, so the one that lets you have 8 complications, not the modular one.
The new one.
Yeah, well, there's 2 new ones. There's a new modular one.
Yes, okay, I've got that as well, but I'm using the same one as you.
The circular one, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful. I love having the weather have the high and low as well as the current temperature. It's just a nice little visual representation. I've got like the activity circles in a corner, so they go round, and then you also get to see the exact numbers for each one, which is nice. So you don't have to sort of appear at that radial and go, is that halfway round or is that a bit more? The only thing that annoys me is that there are certain things that could be on any complication but aren't. It's very weird, like the mixture. So one is the, what's it called, like the UVI one, which is supposed to show you like the amount of UV rays, which is a feature they've added to the weather app. Originally, I thought maybe it was a hardware thing because it was only on this infograph display, but it's not. They're just pulling it from the weather app. But you can only have that on these faces. You can't have that on other ones, which is weird because it's just a number. It's just like 2.5. So I don't understand why some are there and some aren't. Wind speed is another one that you can only have on this face, not on other faces, which is a bit odd. And they've missed a bit of a trick. It's like I used to have the dark sky face, dark sky complication for weather, which was great because it would say like the temperature, and then if it was about to rain, it would change like a little picture of like a rain cloud, or say raining now, and then when it was going to stop, it would have like a little picture of an umbrella closing and say soon. And they have like there's about 5 different faces that are all weather related, complications. You've got a temperature one, you've got the weather status, which is just like an icon of whether it's going to be sunny or rainy or whatever. You've got the wind speed one, you've got the UV ray one, you've got the air quality index one. And it's like kind of weird that there's so many of them. But the weirdest one is the weather icon, which I forget what they call it. Let me just check. It's called weather conditions.
Oh, yeah.
And that is just like a little round one with a symbol of what it currently is. And it's like, well, that's not actually that useful. I want to know what it's going to be later. Like, I want to have like a bar that goes along that shows like sunny, 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 rain, 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 sun. So I know, it's going to be rainy later. I mean, if time travel was enabled, which they've removed by default, I think you can still turn it on, but it's not enabled by default anymore, then you could scroll through and see what it's going to be like later, which is good. But it's just super weird that that one just sits on its own and doesn't have like a curved bit to it, because it easily could. They could shrink the icon down and then just have some text or something. But but generally, I love the face. I think it's great. I like that you can have the text at the top.
I love the calendar around the top, around the face.
Yeah, I don't use the calendar one because I rarely have stuff in my calendar, but I use the things to-do list and does the same exact same thing at the top. I think the reminders one does as well if you use reminders. But no, it's great. It's really nice.
I just noticed, because that was the one thing that frustrated me, was there was no... I like that watch with all the complications, that face, but I'm used to having the digital time. So going back to having, you know, the two hands is like, freaking me out a little bit. And I just noticed you can actually bring up a digital time as well. You can replace the calendar in the middle with a digital time, which is nice.
I mean, the whole, like the when I went to change the complications for it, that page is like, wow, there's a lot going on there.
Yeah,
so you
yeah.
have like the little bits on each corner, then you have the big round one, and then like a little like kidney bean shaped one with three complications in it, and it's super super weird how you can go through it. I don't like the scrolling direction. Like, it feels like the scrolling is reversed the wrong way. Like, I like the way the complications like slide in as if they're like a slideshow, like an old fashioned that comes down the back. Like, what are those things you used to get for kids? Viewfinder, the Viewmaster thing.
Oh, okay.
It does that, but it seems like the scroll is the wrong way. It's like I'm scrolling what I expect to be down, and it's going up. You get that? If like you change complications on that page? It just seems a bit weird to me. The scroll direction doesn't seem right.
I'm doing the wrong... I need to do something that's going to... Hold on, let me go to a different... Are you on the infograph, yeah?
Yeah, I'm just changing my far right one. So the 3 o'clock...
Oh, yeah.
You see what I mean about the scroll? It does seem not the right way around.
Yes, it feels like it should be the other way around. It feels like... Yeah.
Because you can even see the scroll bar in the top right. You're scrolling down, but it's going up. It's like, what?
Yeah, that is weird.
I don't know if that's just a bug, but super weird. But, that's all I have to say on it.
It's very nice. It's a very nice watch. Very nice watch face. Just very, very pleased with it as an upgrade.
Right, we should crack on and talk about the iPhone XS.
iPhone XS. Max. So which one did you go for? Max, did you?
The XS Max, 256 gigs in space gray.
Yeah, I did the XS.
And I got Apple Care this year.
Oh, well done.
So, do I buy a case and make it bulkier, or do I just buy Apple Care this year? I'll buy Apple Care this year.
It is eye-watering, the whole Apple Care thing, but it is, you know, it's weighing up that 200 quid, 199 quid
against this.
Yeah, against a 400 quid screen repair. But, you know, it is that gamble. It's like my wife said, you know, she's dropped hers a couple of times, and I've got a screen protector on it, and it's you know, saved her. But she has had a couple of issues where it would have potentially broken. It probably would have got away with it, but it could have done. But, you know, it's like when you add up what we've spent over the years in Apple Care, which is like any insurance, which is what you got to think of it as, you know, it's the risk thing. And so, yes, for the sake of the time that I've spent with the 10 that she's had and this one, then you could argue, okay, well, yeah, I mean, it's and ours, and I've never dropped mine, that we could have just not done Apple Care and paid for any replacement that needed to be done, which, yeah, you could argue.
The problem is now the phones are so expensive now. Like, if you're spending like £1,400 on a phone, you can probably afford to pay for the insurance because if you broke a £500 phone, it's annoying, but you know, it's not too difficult to get. I mean, even the repair costs used to be cheaper because the screens aren't complicated. Smashing one of these screens, I can tell you, costs £300 to repair because I had to do it last year. So the Apple Care definitely pays for itself.
Well, I do it for two reasons. One, I like the fact that you get, you know, the repairs and all that stuff, and it's all taken care of. The other thing is resale value, because now I've got two 10s that I can sell that are less than a year old at the moment, because they came out in October, didn't they? So I've got two 10s that I can sell in the next week or so that I've still got another year of Apple Care, which is, you know, not going to massively increase their value, especially not 200 quid, but it should allow me to sell it for a little bit more than someone just selling a normal 10 out there, because I've got that extra year. I do that on all the devices, really, because I want that assurance.
Yeah, that makes sense. I do that on computers as well. I always buy Apple Care on laptops, and
definitely.
I bought it on the Mac Pro this year, last year, because I heard of a few issues of them overheating with the two graphics cards. So I thought it was worth just paying the extra and protecting against that, because you do not want £4,500 worth of computer to suddenly stop working.
Yeah, definitely. And I've even used it for the phones, actually, just before I've sold like an iPhone 8, I think it was, or it might be a 7. You know, I had lots of micro scratches on it. So I actually just did an AppleCare replacement. I just, you know, reported screen damage and they picked it up the next day. And 2 days later, I got it back with a brand new screen. It might have even been a brand new device. I don't know. Or refurbed or whatever, but basically an immaculate screen with the little protective sticky thing straight on. So I could just box it straight back up, put it on eBay and sell it as immaculate, you know, which is, you know, nice. Because obviously as well, if it's per year, that you normally get like one accidental repair per year, I think it is, isn't it? So I basically cashed in my repair for that year and then I'm selling it to someone who's got now another year of AppleCare and then they can do what they want with it. And it's a little painful, the transfer process. If you sell a device, you have to sort of phone up Apple or chat with them and then they call you and go through the process. It's not, used to be a form that you could fill in, but it's not anymore. So you need to get the Apple ID of the person you're selling it to, do a quick change and it's all done. It takes about 5 minutes on the phone with them, but I wish it was, you know, a simple form you could fill in instead. It's pretty cool.
I think it's always worth having, but I've already dropped my 10S Max.
Yay!
So the problem is it's not in a case and so it's super slippy. In the hand, I find it very comfortable. But on my bedside table, I don't know what happened because I don't have vibration enabled. And this is super weird. So I have a Belkin, like a watch and phone stand that you can plug your phone in. It's like a little lightning port that you can adjust for the height of the case and that kind of stuff. So you can plug in your phone, you can sit your watch on it. Very nice, cost like 90 quid or something. I bought it when the first watch came out. Liked it so much, I bought a second one. And so usually it's fine. You just plug your phone in and it charges that and it charges the watch. Fine. When I plug my phone in, new phone into it, it doesn't work. It charges the phone for like 10 seconds and then the phone stops recognizing it. And then 10 seconds later it kicks in again and then turns off again. And I was like, I don't like that because you don't want to be screwing around with power. So at first I thought it was just that stand. So then I got another stand out and same thing happened. But if I plug it into the power, like with a 5-watt charger and a lightning cable, it's fine. So I don't know what's up with that. Like whether there's just something about that stand it doesn't like, or there's some firmware update will come that's going to, you know, maybe it has a bug where it doesn't recognize certain devices. I don't know. I've not seen any other reports.
Oh, weird.
But it's really annoying because I wanted to have that and tidy everything up. Because as much as I love the wireless charging, the wireless charging is a pain in the ass because it's like a big, you know, big thing that you lay the phone flat on, which takes up a lot of space. I've got a very, very small bedside table. So I've been using just a normal lightning cable for the past few nights, just plugging it in, sticking it on my nightstand, just having it down. And Belkin have announced a new version of that stand, which is a contactless one. So the watch still sits on a little arm and then the phone stands up, but it's just a contactless charging bit. So I'll get one of those, but they don't come out till December. So using a cable. So I don't know if I just knocked, like, I don't know if one of my dogs knocked the cable. I don't know if I knocked the cable with like my duvet or something, or whether it was just something on the table vibrated and it caused the phone to just slide off, or a gust of wind blew it. I don't know, but it fell off the table and landed with a very loud clatter into the metal legs of the table and then onto my iPad and MacBook. And I was like, oh shit. I was like, you know that bit when you pick it up and you're like, I don't want to turn the screen on because if I turn the screen on, it's probably... And it was fine. I was like, oh, thank Christ for that. My wife woke up and was like, what the hell was that? I was like, I just dropped my phone. She's like, oh God. I was like, it's all right. I've got AppleCare.
Well, I saw some crazy... one of those crazy crash test videos where they go and buy the new phones and then utterly destroy them. And he did a couple of drops where he dropped... I think the Max was much stronger in terms of he was able to drop it from like 12 feet or something straight down and even landed on its, you know, really flat on its face and it was fine. The 10S broke when it landed flat from about 8 feet or 6 feet or something like that. But it was literally perfectly flat. You know, there was nowhere for the energy to go other than the screen. But he did drop it a couple of times on its edge, or as it fell, it hit its edge. And what was interesting was it was dropping it on, I don't know if it was concrete, but it looked like a pretty serious floor. And when he picked it up and said, oh, there's no marks in it at all, not even on the stainless steel, which I just thought,
wow,
that's crazy. That's, I'm not going to try that, obviously.
No, but it's nice to know that is the case. I mean, I was worried I'd have at least some chipping on the side of the case or on the screen. But
yeah.
Nope, it's completely flawless.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
And they are much stronger than they used to be. So how are you finding the... You say you went for the 10S in the end.
I went for the 10S Space... What do they call it now? Space Black or Space Grey. With Space Grey. Yeah. With 512 gig. So, which I technically probably didn't need. 256 was probably enough, but the only thing that I was doing on my old phone was I'd switch to that mode of doing iCloud, only download, you know, previews and then download the full photos when you need them. Because my photo library is something like 100 odd gig of photos. It's quite a lot, and videos. And I'd done that just so I got more space for videos and other, you know, for other stuff. But I didn't like the fact that when I was taking videos, especially 4K videos, that it was potentially uploading those, whether, you know, you can set it to Wi-Fi only, but it's uploading those in the background, and that's using JuiceUp, you know. And also, it really was far too efficient. I would literally take a few photos. I'd go in to do that. I normally go in, edit, enhance. And when I go in to edit, it's already offloaded it off the device. So it's already reloading it down again, which is really frustrating. So I didn't want to worry about space at all. So I went for 512.
That's fair enough.
Which was great, but obviously configuring that for the first time to say I'd like to download all my photos meant your phone's going to run like shit for a couple of days as it downloads 4,000 photos and about 4,000 videos. But it's done now and it's great. And side note, the searching and stuff in photos now is bloody incredible. Just amazing.
Yeah, they've really upped the machine learning stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you know, boring story, but I was talking to another parent about we were talking about weather and kids sleeping and stuff. And I said, oh, I remember when, you know, we used to put them out in the pram and it was snowing. And I got this awesome photo of the pram just sitting in the middle of the garden with snow everywhere. And not being one of those, I'm not normally one of these people that, oh, let me show you that photo. But I just thought, I wonder something. So I went into the Photos app and just typed in pram and then hit. It's really weird because you type in pram and hit enter, and what it's actually doing is giving you a list of selected words. Especially then tap that word for it to then appear. I think the UX is a bit crap there, but anyway,
pram. Yeah, you're basically choosing the machine learning descriptor that it's applied.
Exactly,
it only has certain tags, so you can't.
But I wasn't expecting it to work. Cars, beach. You know, when they talk about it, it's like cars, beach, sky. You know, people's faces, their names, whatever.
Pug works in mine.
Yeah, so I typed in pram. And literally the first three photos that come up are photos of prams, either that pram, which was that picture was the first picture that came up, or two other pictures, which were, you know, the kids standing next to a pram, or the funniest one was one of the kids with a little toy pram, you know, like a little teddy bear pram. It even picked that up, you know, it's little stuff like that. It's just crazy.
Pram in mine, and obviously I don't have, well, I have a pram, but I don't have any photos of it. And it has found a photograph. It's only shown me one, and it's a photo I've taken of Epcot at Disney World, and there is like a little stroller park just in the background.
It's incredible. It is. I mean, and it's so fast. It's so fast.
Well, at its basic, it's a very clever system, but I mean, it's one of those things that happens when the phone is plugged in at night, it goes through your photos sequentially. And then it basically has like these huge machine learning like neural networks where it has, I think it's like 1,000, 2,000 words that it recognizes, be it like mountain, beach, sky, pram, pug, dog, all these things. And it just goes through each photo one by one and sees, does it match any of these things? And then tags it. So it's literally, when you're searching the word pram, it's not doing that in real time. It's just going... Right. Find all the pictures that tagged pram because it's already tagged them while you were asleep. That's why the phone runs a little slow the first couple of days you own it sometimes, because it's been doing all of that processing. So sometimes you'll wake up and be like, why is my phone quite warm? And it's because it just does a shit ton of stuff those first few nights, be it downloading all of your photos or processing through them. But it should be better now because I believe all of that stuff is now synced to the cloud. It wasn't initially... which is why faces and stuff get synced properly now, which they didn't before. So it's all done on machine, on device, but it is now synced between them. So you shouldn't have that anymore when you first get a new phone, because it's already done it previously for your entire library. But it is incredibly clever, very clever system. And it's an API that's available to developers, because I've used it myself just to test it out.
That's
where
nice.
You could just like... put a video feed up and be panning around, and then you can have it like tell you the top 10 descriptors that it's found, and it's just like incredibly accurate. It did think that a Mac Pro was a waste paper basket which was unideal, but
that's genius. I mean, the whole folklore discovery stuff with the app is, you know, we're in that world now with 45,000 bloody pictures that, you know, it's when you're looking for something specific, you end up browsing all these other pictures and thinking, oh my God, I've got all these photos. And, but it does come up with these, I love the way it comes up when you do a search for like pram or whatever, it will do your preview and then do that selection. But then it comes up with other suggestions, you know, it might be a location, it might be the, I think it came up with spring, you know, time of the year. And it just makes the discovery of photos and old stuff really, really good. And the face detection's obviously, you know, still great. I don't know, this isn't a 10S feature.
Do you ever watch those videos that it generates for you, the memories?
Yeah, they're brilliant.
Does those one a day, as long as you've charged your phone overnight? Because again, it compiles all of that at night when it's plugged in, clever. So it's not wasting your power. But some of them are really, really good. And they're quite like a decent mixture as well. Like you get on this day ones quite a lot. But, you know, specific trips that I've got. I've got one of my nephew, and it's got photos of him from 2013 to 2017. And just has loads of photos of him doing stuff. Or
it's very
friends,
clever.
Which is just pictures of my dogs. and I quite like that it's got that like on this day feature now. Like it's got featured photos if you go into the For You section. Where sometimes it shows you stuff that, you know, it's just featured for whatever reason. They have like a theme, but sometimes it'll show you like, this is something that was taken on this day 5 years ago, which I always like those things, but just never liked giving up my entire photo library to have those things done for me.
So no, it's nice. But speaking of photos, I mean, the camera, they underplayed it, I think, in terms of the keynote of what's improved.
Oh, because yes.
I mean, I posted a picture the other day. I haven't done a comparison with the 10, but I'm pretty sure it'll be crap. I was walking the dogs and just pointed it at the sun and took a photo of this scene. And the photo comes out and the sky is perfectly blue and the sun is in the picture as the sun. And it has like a little shimmer around it. And it's got like a little halo effect type thing, just a little subtle one. But it's not whited out. It's not. I remember, you know, I'm not sure if it happened with the 10, but some of the older phones, when you used to point it at a bright light, even a lamp, you'd get that vertical white line would appear. You know, it wouldn't appear on the photo, but in the preview, it would just go mental because it didn't know how to deal with it. But it seems like, and other people are saying the same thing, it seems like this whole thing of don't take photos, you know, towards the sun or towards the bright light if you're taking pictures of people or scenes is just gone now with this smart HDR stuff.
It's very clever. An incredible. I mean, I've taken pictures on it, which... funny enough, we're talking about the feature which shows you old photos. I had some photos from 5 years ago when I had an expensive DSLR with a custom portrait lens. So it's like a really short lens specifically for taking portrait photos with like a nice bokeh effect in the background. And I looked at them and some of them are nice. There's one of my mum that's not great because it was not low light, but it was like early evening. So it was getting darker and it's just not quite right. I took a photo the other day of, well, my wife took a photo of me the other day with the portrait mode, and it looks better than those DSLR photos did. Way better. Like, I'm looking at it now and just thinking to myself, holy shit, that's a nice picture. It looks like it's been, like, taken by a studio professional. It's crazy how good they've made the portrait mode. Or all the modes, really. All of it looks good. But the portrait mode in particular is incredibly good. Incredibly good. And that whole depth of focus... changing thing is lovely. Crazy. I was surprised that it wasn't in real time when I got it.
12.1 is adding that.
But yeah, now I've just read that it's all coming in iOS 12.1.
Yeah. It is nice.
That is a great feature. Really great feature. And works equally well with people and pets. Because I've got quite a nice pictures of the dogs with portrait mode.
And apparently one of the disadvantages of the 10R, nearly said XR, is that the single camera, even though it's got the sort of computational stuff to be able to do portrait mode with a single camera, is only optimized for people and faces. It's only optimized for, as you'd expect, portraits.
I would imagine
So if you're taking pictures of anything else, then it's going to look a bit funny. But yeah, I mean, the camera, they sort of, when you go through the keynote again and you watch it, they do talk about the fact that it's got a better sensor and it's, but I think... it's that difference between the 10 and the 10S. You know, normally they'd come up with numbers and percentages and all these things, wouldn't they? They normally have these lovely things they like to promote, you know, that it takes it's this much faster. You know, the shutter is faster. I've noticed portrait mode photos are faster. One of the issues for me was always, and this is annoying, you know, silly to complain about it because it's amazing. But you know what it's like, well, you'll find out what it's like with kids. When you're trying to get a portrait photo of a child, it's that one little moment you're trying to get, and there would be that 1 second delay for it to do it. And it's much, much faster now, which is really nice. And the adjustment thing is a really nice touch as well, because sometimes you take a portrait shot and it's just a little bit too much the effect, and it's just nice to be able to bring it back a little bit and make it a bit more
just
subtle.
Just make that background really, just a little bit blurred, not massively blurred.
Exactly.
And sometimes you do want it massively blurred. So I took a picture of my dog, and it was a lovely photo right until I looked towards the back of it and realised that he was a little bit excited. And so being able to blur that background a bit more just really made it much better.
I'm really, really so impressed.
One thing I have noticed, though, which is the OLED screen. I mean, A, the pictures look better on the phone than they look on anything else. Like, if I put them on my computer, they don't look as nice. And that's just because of the wide colour gamut and all that kind of stuff. It just looks way nicer. But the other thing is, so we took some pictures at the weekend. We went for one of those baby scan things where you go, it's like a private clinic, and they do like these 3D scans of the baby.
Oh, wow.
You know, they like, it's like an ultrasoundy thing, but it's like, it does like a 3D picture of the baby, which is crazy. Like, you can see its face and everything, and it's really, really clever. But the picture that you get is solid black, like actual proper black, and then the baby is like all orange, really like yellowy orange. And on the OLED screen, I think there must be a timing delay between when the pixels turn on and off, because if it's like a grey picture, it's fine. But with these ones, because they're solid black, the pixels are turned off. So when I scroll through the Photos app, it almost looked like they were slightly animated. And I was like, well, they can't be. These are just solid JPEGs. They're not live photos. But it looked like some of it was moving. And I isolated, realized what it was, is that it has a weird bit of animation because the black is turning off and turning on as it goes along. And so it's not quite as quick. And most of the time you'd never notice it because you don't usually ever have anything which is completely solid black. Like most photos are, you know, you're going to have grays in there.
Oh, right.
You know, a little like, you know, 001 is still black, but it's not OLED black.
Right.
But yeah, so that's a bit weird. I've never seen it before. It's just like a ghosting effect. But weird.
But it is,
I kept swiping through. I was like, why isn't it working? I can't. And Becky's like, oh, you really enjoying looking at the photos of the baby today? I'm like, yep, that's what it is.
That's exactly what's going on, Yeah, it's not technical at all. Like, there's that. It's like one of those little photos of the husband and wife, what they're thinking. And, you know, she's going, oh, I love the fact that he's a little bubble above her head saying, you know, I love the fact that he's taking such an interest in the baby. And you're going, I wonder how this OLED thing's working with the black is. Perfect. No, they definitely underplayed it. I think a lot of people now who either tried one, although it's difficult to do that, I guess, but maybe bought one thinking, okay, I'm going to buy one and then send it back if it's rubbish, or I bought it, but I'm not really sure, you know, about the improvements, have suddenly realized that once they start taking photos and using it, it's like, holy shit, this thing is way, way better. This lens is better. Everything is nicer on this thing. I haven't noticed any major speed improvements. I haven't noticed any massive speed improvements, only because iOS 12 is bloody quick anyway.
Fast. That's the problem, is that iOS 12 made everything so much quicker anyway that you're not going to notice.
I'm trying to think of, like, I mean, Face ID, this is one of the things they said. They sort of implied that Face ID was faster, but didn't really say any numbers, didn't come up with that it's twice as fast or whatever, like they did with Touch ID. So I tried it with the two phones side by side, because even though you've got that thing of, you know, you've got to look at it, whatever they call it, that feature. If you've got them right next to each other, you can actually just look at one and both will open.
Yeah.
And when I tested it, they both opened exactly the same time. So I haven't really noticed any improvement there.
I have noticed an improvement.
Oh, okay.
Very specific cases of if the phone is flat on the table.
So really?
I often have it on my desk. And I used to have to like tap and then leer over like some sort of predator in order to make it unlock. Whereas now I don't have to leer quite so much.
Well, that's interesting.
So it seems to work from a further distance. I've noticed, and also I've had a lot more success with it, like lying down in bed and stuff. It seems to be better, but it's not, I mean, just it seems quicker to me, but I don't know if that's a placebo effect. But I've definitely noticed it flat on the table. I don't have to lean as much to get it to trigger when I used to.
I've noticed it more reliable when I'm wearing different things. So if I'm like taking the dogs for a walk and I've got like my hood up, or I've got headphones on or whatever, it doesn't seem to not recognize me as much as the other one used to.
General reliability. I don't think I've ever had to enter my PIN number in since I've had this phone. And usually I have to maybe once or twice. Not very often, but occasionally.
So I don't think I have either.
It seems better. It seems intangibly better.
What about, have you noticed anything? Because this is the other thing I didn't realize, that the LTE's got a better, they've added this extra antenna.
The gigabit.
Not just that, but you know, the speaker holes, they were fake anyway, on the left-hand side, one of them were fake. But there's only three on one side now because they've added an extra antenna line, which apparently is to improve the reception for LTE and Wi-Fi. So I have noticed that the bars are fuller than the old device. I haven't noticed any massive speed improvements or anything, because obviously it depends on networks and things. But in terms of reception quality, apparently there's supposed to be an improvement there as well.
I can't say I've noticed it, but then I don't get reception in my house, so it doesn't really... I don't notice it, because when I'm out and about, I'm not generally using my phone. It's in my pocket, or I take it out and it's like, oh, I've got internet, which I just expect generally. So I can't say I've noticed it being better. In my house, it's not better. It's not suddenly made it work in my house. I still have one bar and it still doesn't work, which is really, actually, it's really useful for testing. I had an app recently where the company that built it, because I was doing some consultancy, hadn't properly added stuff like loading spinners. They just assumed it was always going to load. And so to test it, rather than using the network link conditioner, I found it was actually better to just turn off Wi-Fi, because it would keep trying for ages and sometimes work but mostly fail. And so it's actually really good for iOS development. So I'm kind of glad that they haven't fixed that.
Other than that, the camera's probably been the biggest thing, I think.
The camera is the biggest change. I mean, for me, the screen is better because I've gone up a size. So the
screen is
the main improvement for me, aside from the
camera. And battery life.
Yeah, but I don't really care about that because I work from home. I'm nearly always plugged in. It's not ever really been a concern for me, battery life. I rarely run out of battery. I don't think there's anything else really. I mean, it's just better all round. Everything is nicer about it. The product feels nicer. It seems more solid from the drop tests that I've inadvertently done. Everything loads faster, but that's partially iOS 12, partially the updated stuff. It's just better. It's just nicer. But it's worth getting just for that camera, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Especially with me, with a baby on the way, I was like, I definitely want this phone because I want the better camera. And I'm very, very pleased with how much better it is, because it is way better than I thought it was going to be. But everything else, I mean, it's like we always say, it's there's not much else to add to a phone at this point in time.
I mean, it's going to be very interesting next year. Put it that way. I know don't want to talk about it now, you know, stop working out what's going to happen next year, but I'm struggling to see what they can improve on. You know, even if you said next year we've made it twice as fast as the 10S, it's like, it's already fast enough. I can't imagine my apps loading any faster than they already are, because they load instantly. It's just, it's fast enough. So it would have to be again, camera improvements. It would have to be stuff like, we're reaching that point on the curve.
Camera improvements are getting to the point now where they already look like professional cameras that cost thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
You're not going to get much better than that.
I mean, you're taking a photo that's doing, what was it, 3 trillion calculations per second or whatever it is. And it's doing all the smart HDR stuff. It's doing portrait mode. Yes, you could improve portrait mode. Maybe you can improve portrait mode through software. Maybe you can improve it through hardware. But that's a crazy reason. Not crazy reason, but it seems like not a massive tentpole feature to say upgrade to this new £1,400 phone because portrait mode is going to be a little bit better than it was last year, or a bit faster, or works on video or whatever. So it just feels like, I don't know camera-wise how you can... I don't know how they're going to do.
Next year they're just going to go, pop up on stage, Lisa's going to come out and she's going to say, when we said that these phones are going to last for years, we weren't lying.
Yeah.
Still as good this year as it was last year. We're not selling any new ones. Same price.
Yeah.
It's still the best smartphone.
Yeah. Go home, go and get some of the free buffet. Bye.
So one thing I hadn't realized last week, or the week before whenever we did the podcast, that I screwed up on, is that the iPhone XR, it's not coming out this Wednesday. It's coming out in October. I completely misread the date. I thought it was... Do you remember I said, oh, we've got pre-orders, then we've got software updates,
oh, yes,
then we've got the release, and then this pre-order, and that release. And it's not. It's next month that the XR comes out. Which seems sensible, because that's going to be a very, very popular phone, given it has a lot of the same stuff. I'm interested to see next year if they're going to do... Like, it wouldn't surprise me if next year they didn't upgrade these 10Ss, because I don't think you can make this much better. Like, I think they would be better putting this almost to a two-year cycle. And next year they just go, okay, well, we've updated the 10R a little bit, and we've released a smaller 10R, like somewhere between the SE size and the iPhone 8 size. Because the 10R is between the iPhone 8 and the 8 Plus. Like, I don't think they're going to do, like, you remember we had all those renders of, like, an SE with a notch.
Oh,
like,
Christ.
I don't think that's going to happen. But I wouldn't be surprised if there was one between the two. So smaller than a, like, so what have we got at the moment? We've got the 5.5-inch Max, the 5.5-inch 10S, the 6.5-inch 10 Max, the 6.2-inch 10R. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a 5.2-inch 10R next year, maybe. Maybe that's all they do. They just go, we've got new 10Rs, because the Max is like, I mean, the 10S, there's not much more to do that's going to be a game changer.
Yeah, I mean, if you went down that route, you could say, okay, they could do a 10R that has pretty much the same hardware, but maybe they add the dual cameras, or maybe they do something clever there, I don't know.
Yeah.
But then they're sort of admitting that the one camera doesn't work.
Stick with the LCD.
Stick with the LCD. Because the other thing that's interesting is, like, you know, I wouldn't imagine, although they could, I wouldn't imagine they would do a 10R with an A13 or an A14 or whatever they call it, and then leave the 10S, you know, on the A12. That just seems a bit weird to have your flagship device with a lower processor. However, that could be a thing they could do. They could take the 10R and go, we're doing a new size. It's still going to have an A12. We're doing a new size, and it's going to have a new camera system. And, you know, that for a lot of people will be a big difference.
Yeah.
It's interesting because with the processor thing as well is, again, we've reached that point where, you know, compared to a 6 or a 5, definitely a 5 and a 6, obviously, the processing speed is incredible. And you could remember when they used to do those keynotes and say it's, you know, twice as fast or it's 1.5 times quicker. It's not happening really anymore. They did it on the GPU this time, really. They said that I think it was 50% faster or something.
Yeah.
But on the CPU, even though they've gone down to this new 7-nanometer method of fabrication, is there again, we're hitting that curve again where we're not seeing that huge leap. You know, suddenly it's not that the power management's a bit better, it's a little bit faster. But, you know, especially with the power management, when they were saying about it's getting this much more efficiency with lower power, I was thinking, holy shit, we're going to get a good amount of extra. I think it's half an hour. I think they've added half an hour on the 10S, which is okay. You know, it's nice, but it's not as much as I thought it would be.
No.
And I think that's where the breakthrough, that would be where the next breakthrough needs to be, which is the same problem everyone's got, batteries. If they can suddenly say, we've got a product next year that is the 10S2 or whatever the hell they're going to call it, and we've managed to squeeze more power, or more CPU power, but less energy, and suddenly we've got a device that's now got, we've doubled the standby time and we've doubled the, you know, web time, and the 15-hour watching videos is now 30 hours. That would be incredible. That would be amazing. Mm. I know it's difficult because you say you can't see this stuff, and then they come up with all this new shit anyway. It's amazing. And you go, oh, wow.
I can't imagine what they could possibly add.
But I can't. Stage. Yeah. You've got a camera that you can point at a scene and it will computationally take the best photo for you and could give you something that's almost as good as a DSLR for most people that would look at it. I wonder how you can improve on that next year.
Yeah.
Without adding shit, you know, loads more lenses and loads more, you know, having 5 lens system or something crazy and that's the funny thing, because the competitors, it's like the Jurassic World thing. It's like the Jurassic World comment more about teeth. More teeth. It's like, it's like, okay, what do you think they're going to do next year? Let's add more lenses. Suddenly the back of their phone's got like 10 lenses on it that can take,
to be honest,
incredible.
That would fix the bump problem, because I still hate that my phone wobbles when I put it flat. That does annoy me. I almost wish, and this sounds horrible, I wish that they'd put like the exact same thing in each corner as if it was like a table feet.
A little foot.
Yeah, because then at least it wouldn't fucking wobble. It really annoys me. And I know the solution is to put it in a case, but then it bulks it out so much, and I don't want a bulky phone.
Imagine the shit they would get if they put like a little nubbin in each corner.
I would love it. I am pro nubbin.
Or you put the same camera slot in all four corners just with nothing in it. So it's like a big, so it's perfectly symmetrical. When you look on the back, it looks like 4 feet.
Why not just have 8 lenses?
Yes.
Problem solved.
Yeah.
8 lenses. We solved it.
Because what did the Pixel do? That was the clever thing the Pixel did, was that they said, we've got no camera bump. And it's like, yeah, but you're...
It was like a wedge, wasn't it?
It's a wedge of cheese. That's why you got no camera bump. You know, and that's why when their specification said how thick it was a weird... They had like a weird symbol with two values, because it was basically saying, well, it's this thin to this thin, because we can't say it's one or the other because it's a wedge. That was always made me laugh. The other thing that made me laugh in that whole keynote with the Pixel was that they had the headphone jack and made a big deal out of it. And then everyone seems to be dropping headphone jacks now. But anyway.
Fucking headphone jack.
Oh, God. I mean, yeah, what was that other? Okay. So the two things that annoyed me about that while we're on that is in the packaging, the people complaining about the supposedly slow charger, whatever, it still charges your phone. I mean, you've probably got another charger you can use, but I think that slow, that 5 watt or whatever it is, still charges an iPhone pretty quickly. But more annoying than that was the fact that there were, you know, people complaining that they dropped the headphone jack. It's like, get over the headphone jack. Get over the need for an adapter. Get over it. You know, you can, if you need it, it's what, £8 or £10? If you really want to use cabled headphones because you bought some £300 stupid, bloody, amazing headphones that you think are incredible and they've got a cable, then buy an adapter to put it in the Lightning port. Otherwise, just go wireless. I don't think I have any situation now where I use my... I mean, I don't sit at my desk with headphones on all the time and listen to music. So I'm not one of those people. Maybe if you work in a big company, then that's a challenge. But I'm not one of those people. If I wanted to listen to music like that, I'd put it on Alexa Dingus, or I'd put it on the other Dingus. Yeah. And I'd listen to music that way. But for what I do use it for, which is stuff like this, or I'm going out for a walk and I wear a pair of headphones... I charge them probably not even once a week. I mean, I can't even remember the last time the headphones that I use when I go out for a walk beeped at me to be charged. It was probably 2 weeks ago.
I don't think I've ever heard my AirPods ever ask to be charged.
No.
Not once.
No.
Crazy. Crazy.
So you just got to go. It's like the USB-C thing. It's like people still saying, do you think the new iPad's going to come out with... they haven't said USB-A, but it's that whole sort of idea, you know, can we have USB-A? If this new iPad Pro is going to come out with a USB-C port because it can plug into an external monitor, can we have a USB-A port as well? Get over it. Get over it. USB-A USB-A. I still had a situation yesterday when I'm setting up this new damn iMac, which I really like the fact that it comes with USB-C ports. I was annoyed at the fact it didn't have Thunderbolt port, because my drive's a Thunderbolt, but I've got a converter. So that was fine. But what pissed me off more than anything was trying to plug a damn USB-A into the back of it and going through that dance of, no, it's wrong, turn it round, no, it's still wrong, no, turn it round, it still feels wrong, turn it round again, oh no, that is the correct way, you know? That is shit. And I don't understand why anybody wants A, that shit, and B, that shit for then a cable and a system that runs at a ridiculously slow speed. You know, I totally am all in on USB-C for the fact that I can plug it in either way and it's super fast. I love the fact that MacBooks, you can just plug a power cable into anywhere, which is probably why they didn't do MagSafe, because A, it will probably be bigger and more hassle to put in, and B, if your cable's going to be in the way going that way, plug it in the other way. You know, it's not a big deal.
This morning trying to plug my, because I have my Blue Yeti mic generally plugged into my gaming PC, and I had to unplug it from there and plug it into the Mac, and I was like, I can't work out the way to put the bloody thing. Ugh, I hate USB-A.
Very, very frustrating. And you know, if these people who have all these opinions were the ones that tried to, you know, if they could say, if I work for Apple, I'd do this, we'd end up with thick, huge laptops with shitty ports, with headphone jacks, you know, with loads of USB-A ports all over it, no USB-C, or just loads of bloody ports all over the damn thing, with SD card slots, with all this crap that you're probably never going to use half the time.
The thing that gets me is that people assume that everyone wants the same thing that they do.
Yeah.
And that Apple, a company literally worth $1 trillion, doesn't understand what people want.
Yeah.
When it's very clear that they do know what people want, and that the people in the tech press are of a very significant, well, a very, very small minority. How many phones being sold probably the other day? Like millions. Tens of millions of iPhones were probably sold last week. And probably, if we're being generous, 10,000, 20,000 of those are to people as interested in this stuff as we are and others.
Yeah.
It's a small number. Most people don't care. Yeah. Like, it just doesn't cross most people's mind to worry about these things.
Yeah. And any supposed deficiencies are easily solvable. You know, you can buy a little adapter. If you had a previous phone, you've probably got the adapter for your headphones. You can buy
the headphones. I mean, the headphones, if you already got a big, great cable going down anyway, just plug it into the little adapter. It doesn't make any difference.
Yeah.
It's still the same. Charge at the same time, but then who's charging their phone and listening to music on it at the same time?
Well, if it's a wireless charging, you can. But if it isn't, again, there's other adapters. It's not like you have to buy a million of these things. They're probably 15 quid on Amazon that will give you a dual. I've seen ones that are like dual. You know, they take two lightning port and they charge it or whatever. It's just got to get over it. It's like the whole dongle gate thing with the MacBook Pro. Yes, I made the mistake when I first bought the MacBook Pro with USB-C to buy a few dongles because there wasn't any unified one out there. So I got a couple of the conversion. You know, so I ended up getting two of these Thunderbolt ones and one for doing this and one for doing that, which was, yeah, probably crazy to do. I should have waited because I didn't need them at the time. And then I've got one of these HyperDrive things, which is a really small dongle, plugs into the two USB-C ports, gives you still two USB-C ports, gives you two USB-As, two SD card slots, an HDMI. It was like 50 quid, 60 quid, whatever. It's a one-off purchase. It goes in my bag. It stays in my bag. Number of times I've got it out in the last year, twice to do stuff. I'd rather do that and have that all of those ports in a little thing that I use twice than have all of those ports all over the laptop that make it thicker, that make it heavier, probably not that much, but you know what I mean. But I'd much prefer what they're doing. And that is the argument. It's that thing of, well, do you think you're right? Or do you think the company that's just become $1 trillion company? And I know it's a really flippant argument to come back with because people will go, oh, well, obviously, you know, you're going to say that. But it's true. You know, I think when Apple were at their worst is when they were being run for targeting specialists almost and targeting those prosumers that want the USB-C USB-A ports. Do you know what I mean? They weren't thinking of the product as a consumer product. And I think when the iMac, when Jobs created the iMac, you know, that first colorful one, that was when it became a consumer product for me because not that I had one, but do you know what I mean? It was suddenly something you could just pick up and it was one whole thing. It had a handle and it was blue or different colors and it was clearly aimed at a different market. And that's when they went crazy. And so that's what they're going to do, you know? And the other thing to bear in mind is all these bloody screens that come up when you install stuff about analytics. I'm sure Apple have got the data.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure they've got the data that says out of the people who have let us get analytics, because many people don't, we've determined that no bugger used that weird contact list that came up in the first watch. You know, two people used it. So we're ditching it. Five people or a small percentage of people used the whatever you called it, you know, the time travel. We're going to ditch that. We're going to ditch that or we're going to move it in. I loved it, but we're going to ditch that or move it in the background. So it's a feature that's not obvious anymore. It's not there by default. I'm sure they've got the data for this stuff. I'm sure they realize how many people.
Yeah, they're not doing it on a whim.
No, they'll have the data. It's just like how they're updating stuff and what they're focusing on and what they're improving. It's going to be interesting to see what happens in October with what's hopefully, I mean, it might not be because they've said this in the past that there'll be another event. People have surmised there'll be another event and there hasn't been. But if there is, it'll be interesting to see what happens with these new iPads.
It looks like time travel's gone completely. It was relegated to an option you had to turn on, but I think it has actually been completely removed now.
You only get it. You get sort of basic of it on the Siri face, where I can be on. It will tell me what's up next, what's happening today, and if I scroll, it will go to tomorrow. But that's all it does.
Useless. That's not good. Like the whole point of time travel was that you could fast forward complications, which was great.
Exactly.
You could see what the weather was going to be like in 20 minutes, or
yeah,
you know, what is in your calendar. So yeah, I think it's gone. Just gone.
That's a shame.
It's a shame. I'd not enabled it for a while, so I'm not that fussed about it, but it's a shame.
But exactly, but that's my point. It's probably there's data metrics that are saying people weren't activating it for a while. They weren't using it. They weren't into that feature, you know? And that's why they make those decisions. So I don't want to be like one of those people that's like, oh, I trust them, you know, I think they're doing the best for us, and it's all a bit weird like that. But I think you can't really argue with a company. You can't argue with a company that is doing phenomenally well. And despite what people said about the 10 to 10S difference and it being, oh, it's a minor bump, I think it will have sold shitloads.
Have they announced any sales figures or anything yet? Because usually they do oh, you know, the sales weekend was great. And I've not seen anything like that.
No, not yet.
But no, there's nothing. Which is weird because it's Monday now, but I guess they'll do that in a week or so. But I'm interested to see what the breakdown will be between these devices and the 10R. Because the 10R is going to be great for a lot of people. I mean, I was tempted to get one for my wife, but she doesn't want an even bigger phone. Because obviously it's bigger than the iPhone 10 that I've just given her. So she's not that keen, though she would like the colours and all that kind of stuff.
It should be very interesting.
But yeah, if they made a smaller one as well, like I sort of said earlier, they're going to sell a shit ton of them. Because there are a lot of people that like that. But yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how it'll fare. But for now, I'm incredibly pleased with both of my purchases, the XS Max and the Series 4 Apple Watch especially.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, the watch is the bigger deal for me generally as a device, but definitely the camera is the big thing on the phone. But yeah, watch is sort of, out of the two, I'm much more impressed with the watch as a whole.
More impressed by the watch because the watch has got more improvements across the board. Yeah. That's the difference. I mean, the XS Max is improving on something that was already pretty decent, whereas the watch is a decent jump forward from what it was previously.
Yeah, so, exactly. Very
anything
nice.
Else on those before we wrap
no,
up?
No, I think that's it.
Awesome. Well,
cool.
I'll catch you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, good to talk. See ya.